real problem, and then you see this nice big jump. And we saw that 4 years ago. And now it's been 4 years, and because of the way the Constitution works, it'll be 6 years before it even comes up again. And then it might be another 2 years. And so you see this real leapfrog approach with judiciary salaries. And I'll use this as an opportunity to express to minorities that there's never a good year. There's never a good time. If we don't keep it in front of you, then you see this leapfrog approach. But the official line is we are not seeking any additions to the salary. And I'm the least worked judge according to the workload study. So I am concerned about that. I'm going to all these counties. All right. Moving back to, Agency 121, that is Judge Sharp, and again, with the withdrawal of the 23-5, I think it was, exception for the commissioners, there is no exception to that budget. The next budget is 122, that is Judge Waldrop in Carbon County, and there are no exceptions to that budget. And now I'm on page DC-19, that is Agency 123, Judge Donnell, and there are no exceptions to that budget. The next one is 124, that is Judge Lavery in Sweetwater County, and there are no exceptions to that budget. The next budget or agency is 125 on DC 28, that is Judge Blumel, who covers Uinta and Lincoln County, and there is an exception in that budget. Let me get the exact number, $8,379. That's for a photocopier in Kemmer. And I can tell you that I did cover a jury trial, criminal jury trial in Kemmer last fall, and they don't have a photocopier there. They use the clerks, and Judge Blumel has kind of changed his chambers around a little bit. He's more headquartered in Kemmer now than in Evanston. And so he needs that photocopier. And that's something that I think you see probably historically. A new judge comes on, and there's a few of these miscellaneous things that come up. And I think you've heard quite a bit about photocopiers this morning. It's an exception of 8379. I called him personally and says, why is this and why is it different from the M numbers? And Ms. Racinas explained that. I mean, it's kind of, you buy it locally, you want the service. And that's the one he wants, and it's within the kind of range.
Representative Greer?
Yeah, thank you, Mr. I defer to co-chair.
Ms. Co-chair?
I have a question. Is this agency 125? I thought you said 128.
I misspoke.
No, 125.
It's 125.
Okay, thank you.
I'm on page DC 29.
Okay, thank you. That's okay. I thought maybe you'd skip.
Did you have a question? I do have a question. Yeah, thanks, Mr. Chairman. Judge Finn, I'm just curious, within the judge's chambers or within their office, how many pages a year?
That's
a hard question.
I think that I just had to have my photocopier kind of refurbished, if we're going through that, and I think about 80,000, and that's over a couple years. We don't do – nothing like a law firm. But it's 80,000 is the number that came up, and I'm not sure what period of time. We've had that copier for maybe 4 years, so about 20,000 a year would be my estimate.
Okay, and that's, Mr. Chairman, I'm just curious with that. So 20,000's, $8,000 copiers are the more expensive. Are these coming with the plans? The maintenance plans and the update, or it just seems to me this has come up quite a bit. We ought to find a way that we've got money in these budgets so that you can have a copy machine that works appropriately.
Mr. Chairman, Representative, I don't think they're coming with the plans, and I can only tell you, and this is 10 years ago when I was still in private practice with a firm that did significantly more. We spent $25,000 for a copier magnitude different. And these are nice machines. They're just what a chambers needs, but they're not top-of-the-line machines. They're certainly not low-end machines either. Where we see a lot of photocopying, time-sensitive photocopying, is we've got a jury waiting, and we've got to get jury instructions, 15 copies of those done, and done quickly. And that's really where where I think the higher end or mid-level photocopier pays off. You know, we don't do a lot of photocopying, particularly now with this Y user, routinely, but we use it as a printer as well. It scans, prints, photocopies, and that's our main in-chambers printing. All the things that I brought with me today were printed off on my photocopier as a printer as well.
Okay. Yeah, Mr. Chairman, I appreciate that information. I'm just kind of looking at maybe photocopiers ought to be a standard budget item instead of having to be an exception request. I don't know. My opinion. I guess we'll talk about it later.
Thank you. Go ahead, Judge.
That addresses Agency 125 and the exception of 8379 for that. Moving on to Agency 126, that is my district, and there are no exemptions or exceptions for that budget. The next one is 127. That is Judge Scar in Washakie, Hot Springs, and Basin, or Bighorn County. There is one exception there, and I'm happy to report I spoke to Judge Scar on Monday. The water litigation budget item of $300,032.88 is not necessary, and it can be stricken from the budget. He informed me that the water litigation is tailing off, finishing up. There are some administrative staff that is doing some things with respect to keeping his computer website accurate and some data. He expects that to be complete and done by the end of this fiscal year, and there will be no need for any further water litigation in that in his budget, which is, I think, a long time coming.
Judge, now we're having a little confusion on committee. You said that was an exception request.
Well,
it's in the standard. Okay, what line is that, members?
Mr. Chairman, I'm looking at DC 39. The second line on that line item first says administration and water litigation.
Okay.
A 200 series. And gosh, the standard budget in column three is $332,088.
And that is finished.
Pardon?
Okay, and what about that amount?
It could be stricken from his budget. It will not be necessary for an upcoming biennium.
Just full of good news today, Judge Finn.
I'm sorry, sir.
The judiciary has been full of good news today. It's been really these tight budget times.
I was happy to bring that to your attention. I don't know the answer to that. Other than that, there are no exceptions to that budget. The next budget is Agency 128. I'm looking at DC 45. That is Judge Cranfield up in Park County, and he also covers Bighorn County as well. There are no exceptions to that budget. The next one is Agency 129, which is on page DC 50. That is Judge Tom Rumpke in Campbell County, and there are no exceptions to that budget. The next one I'm looking at, DC 55, which is Agency 130. That is Judge Forgy in Natorna County, and there are no exceptions to that budget. The next one I'm looking at is DC 59, which is Agency 131, which is Judge Solens in Natorna County, and there are no exceptions to that budget. The next one is page DC 63, which is Agency 132. This is Judge Norm Young in Fremont County, and he has an exception request in his budget for $34,815. That's for a staff person, and he has come here from Lander to explain that, and I think he's explained it. I listened to the tape recording of the last session and listen to him talk about that, and that's he's here to talk about it today. I won't steal his thunder because I probably won't do it justice. But Judge Young is here today to answer any questions about that. It's a staff person that is caught up in this county-state debate that we seem to occasionally rear up in district court issues. So I'll turn it over to Judge Young with your permission.
Okay, very good. Welcome, Judge.
Thank you. Mr. Chairman, Judge Smith is correct, and some of you undoubtedly will remember I was here 2 years ago. The situation is this. To remind you who are here and who weren't, in the mid-'80s in Fremont County, Judge Kale, I think, actually was the judge who was able to convince the county commissioners to fund a half-time administrative position for the district court in Lander. That went on without interruption for 30 years, practically, until 2 years ago when the commissioners were looking at some of the same budget issues that you all are looking at and started asking questions about that and sort of with justification said, look, this is a state court. Those should be state positions. And so we would like for you to go and see if you can get that funded through the state rather than through the county. And I came down here, and you all graciously agreed to make that position that had been in existence for 30 years as a county position a state position. That was the good news. The less than good news was you funded half of it, and which allowed me to take half of the funding, go back to the county commissioners, and say, I've got half the money. Will you go the other half? And they said, yes, we will do that. The price for that is, though, you must make us a solemn pledge that you will go back 2 years hence, here I am, and attempt to convince the legislature to fund the other half of that. So it's not, I don't want there to be some confusion that it is a new position, at least for Fremont County. It is one that has been in existence for 30 years. You funded half of that the previous time, and the budget exception, the $35,000, would fund the other half. The other thing that I would say about all of this, and this is particularly interesting having sat here all morning, the concern last time, and in fact, I think Senator Bebout, who is a friend of mine, asked me, what's different about Fremont County, and if we do this for you, aren't we going to have to do it for a lot of people? And I've thought a lot about that, and here is my response to that. First of all, 2 years have passed, and I'm still the only one asking. But if someone does ask, I think the answer to that is you look at where they stand. I'm not the busiest district judge in the state, but I am a very busy district judge, and this position is an integral part of what we do in Fremont County. Without it, I will lose staff and my ability to deliver the judicial product, if you will, the way I am right now. But here's the other way. So that's sort of the specific look at it. But when I back up and think about all of this, when I walked in the courthouse in Fremont County in 1980, Representative Nicholas's father was the judge. He had his staff was a law clerk, a judicial assistant, and a court reporter, which is basically what we all still have. I have the luxury of an additional halftime position. At that time, when you walked in the courthouse, there was one clerk of the district court and a deputy, two people in there. When I left there yesterday to come down here, there are five people in the clerk of the district court's office. Back in 1980, there was a part-time county attorney and several part-time deputies. I was the county attorney from 1995 to 2003. During that period of time, there was myself and four deputies. When I left yesterday, there are seven full-time deputies plus the county attorney. I also served prior to that time as a public defender, there were two of us through the 80s and into the 90s who were part-time people. And when I left yesterday, there were six full-time public defender positions in Fremont County as opposed to two part-time people. And the point I'm making is that a tremendous amount of the work that all of those people generate comes right across my desk and it comes across John's desk. And so if, you know, we talk about making the best use of judicial resources, to contemplate adding judges is a tremendous expense. But to contemplate giving a little bit of additional administrative assistance seems to me to be a fairly reasonable thing. And that's the reason for the request.
Okay. Any, Senator Perkins.
So, Mr. Chairman, Judge Young, when I so I look at the 28,080 request in salaries classified, what you're telling us is that the other half of that, the other 28,080, is already in the
it's already in the
103 class code classification, and this is the other half. Is that correct?
Yes, that is correct.
Okay.
Okay. Any other questions? Senator Burns?
Are there any other places in the state where it, that has an arrangement like that where the county's paying for?
At this point in time, no.
This is the only
that I'm aware of, no.
Thank you.
Go ahead. Go ahead.
So when you go down there, Judge Young, we go down and look at your personnel numbers on the bottom of page 67. We see the in the standard budget you've got one full-time and one part-time. And so in doing this, that's why there's no increase there, because that personnel is already counted in your standard budget.
Correct.
But it's just this funding issue is the only
Correct.
Difference. Right.
As I understand it, as a result of your action last time, she is now, I know this, she is classified as a state employee. The budget shows half of what it takes to pay her salary. We entered into a memorandum of understanding with the county, and they supply the other half, is the way it's currently structured.
Okay. Any other questions? Did Representative Conley, did you?
Okay.
Senator Burns?
In this particular individual, are they getting, for instance, health and retirement and so
yes.
forth? Yes. I assume she's getting full health. But is she getting retirement based on only what her state salary is?
I take your answer or your question to me, is she being paid retirement only on the state?
Yes.
I believe she is paid on the full amount because the county, in effect, puts money into the general fund, I guess is the way I would look at it, to pay her.
But the state bases its the amount of money it puts into the retirement account based on what it's a percentage of what they're being paid. And I don't know how the state can keep track of what the county is paying. So what I'm saying is I'm afraid this person may be getting shortchanged in terms down the line as far as their retirement goes.
Here's the way I understand it in my simple sort of way. The county is putting money in to the state's account. She doesn't get two separate checks or anything like that. She gets one check. It's a state check. And the county is simply, under this memorandum of understanding, paying money to the state, which gets then returned to her.
So she's getting full retirement and full health.
That is my understanding.
Thank you.
Representative Moniz.
Is there a sunset date on the memorandum of understanding with the county commissioners?
I believe there is. In fact, I'm lucky enough, I think, to have a copy of it. I think it's in like 2 years. Let me look. I read it last night. I'm not seeing that. It has a 30-day termination clause. In other words, the county can, either side can opt out on 30 days' notice. I thought it does have a term. Through June 30th of 2016, upcoming. So, yes.
Any
I do have one other comment. Senator Wassenberger gave me a start this morning when he started talking about a judicial nominee who got caught back in the 70s for throwing eggs. And then I remembered that he wasn't on the committee when I interviewed. But most of all, I remember that I didn't get caught. Thank you very much.
Mr. Chairman, with your permission, I'll continue forward. I think we're now at page DC-68, which is agency 133. This is Judge Pat Correll in... I actually signed it because I was a chair and there was nobody in that position, but that's Judge Correll, who was recently appointed in Goshen County to fill the position that now Justice Kautz left, and there are no exceptions to that budget. The next agency is 134. That is on page DC-73. That is Judge Day up in Teton County, and there are no exceptions to that budget. The next agency is 135. That is Judge Perry in Campbell County, as well as his district covers Weston and Crook County. And there are no exceptions. And I'm looking at page DC-78. There are no exceptions to that budget. Yes, he does. A fancy pen, too. The next agency is Agency 136. I'm looking at page DC-83. That is Judge John Brooks out of Douglas, and there are no exceptions to that budget. The next agency is 137. I'm looking at DC-87. That is Judge Wilking out of Natrona County, one of the three judges that handle Natrona County, and there are no exceptions out of that budget. The next agency is Agency 138. Which is Judge James out of Sweetwater County, and there are two exceptions to this budget. And I want to kind of explain how the budget process goes within the district court and what I learned. When this initially, she was the first one to get her exceptions. The district court conference has their own budget committee, which is made up of the leadership of the district court conference, and we look at these and we say yay or no, yes or no. As kind of a first screen. And I was new to the job, and I looked at this and said, no. Get it out of your own budget. That's how I got my photocopier. I'm kind of, I didn't have to come for an exception, so I don't know how we juggle things. But then I got enlightened, and I started looking at the budget, and I found out that my budget, Judge James is the lowest budget of all the district court judges. And she is... tens of thousands of dollars, still within a couple percentage point of everybody else, but she's the lowest budget. And so I called her and I said, boy, I see why you need it, and I support you on this. I think you ought to just bring your regular budget up and not go for this exception. And then I was learned about codes and reoccurring things and stuff that was, I don't still fully understand, but I guess it doesn't make sense or it doesn't work to just bring her budget up in the 200 series because technically it's a kind of a capital expenditure. And so of this exception, one of those is a photocopier, and I think that amount, I wish I would have highlighted it. Christy might be able to help me out here. Oh, it's $6,195, and I'm looking at DC-96. Of the exception that she's one exception she's requesting is for a new photocopier, and her number is lower than the one in Kemmer because she's got a $3,000 trade in and so that's the difference. And I had a conversation with both Judge Blumel and Judge James. I said, I'm going to get asked about this. What's the difference? And that's the difference. And there are also subtle differences you heard about this morning. Try to buy locally so you get good service, and there's a few bells and whistles that one chambers may or may not want, but they're very comparable photocopiers. One has a bigger trade-in value than the other, and that's the difference. The other exception that she seeks is is $3,000 in the 900 series. And the 900 series is kind of our professional services slush fund that we can use primarily for interpreters or court reporters. If a court reporter goes out on sick leave or goes out on vacation, we bring in, we first try to borrow somebody from within the judiciary at no expense, but we also will sometimes have to bring in an outside court reporter, and that's a significant cost. And it's kind of unexpected. You don't know when it's going to happen exactly, but it can be significant. And the other issue in that area that line item covers is interpreter costs. Again, we don't know when we're going to need an interpreter, but that's something that the court has to provide and can be quite expensive if you have to provide an interpreter. And in Sheridan, I've had a few of these that come up, but not a great deal. I have now learned that I-80 corridor has a higher percentage of a need for, not just Spanish, but which is what I've seen in Sheridan. I've seen Basque in Johnson County. They have Russian. They have different dialects of Ukrainian. They see a lot of different type of people that go through the I-80 corridor. And that is just to bump up that line item for what's anticipated in that area. And again, what we do, the Supreme Court has a little bit of a fund, I think it's that they can kind of help out with. And some of the other districts also will, if we have some money left over, I think we can shift that money over. But Judge James is running such a tight ship down there that she needs that. And she still is probably one of the lowest budgets to the district courts, and those are the two exceptions that she's requesting.
Could we take that from one of the highest paid courts and just transfer it over?
In all honesty, Mr. Chairman, Representative Nicholas, at the end of the biennium, my budget usually it's a $1,000,001 budget roughly, and so 1% of that is $11,000. That's about what kind of I'll buy a photocopier or buy some unique things at the end of the budget with that, and Judge James doesn't have that in there. Or I kick it back. Last biennium, we if we don't use it, we don't spend it. And to Judge James' credit, I mean, she's kind of being penalized by running the tightest ship in the state with respect to district court judges. And so I'm very supportive of this conception because she's still running one of the tightest ships in the state. If that answers the question, sir. If there are no further questions, I'll move on to the next agency. It's agency 139. I'm looking at DC 98. That is Judge Wilking in Natrona County, and there are no exceptions to that budget. The next budget is agency is 140. I'm looking at DC 102. That is Judge Deegan in Campbell County. And there are no exceptions to that budget. The next agency is 141. That is Judge Tyler in Sublette County. I'm looking at DC 107. And there are no exceptions to that budget. And I might add, Judge Tyler is one of those judges that is, he doesn't have, according to the workload study, as many, as busy a workload in his district. He has really stepped it up, and he covers much of southwest Wyoming. And, in fact, just yesterday we were exchanging emails. He's covering one in Campbell County, and the conversation was, I said, I'll do it so you don't have to travel. And he said, well, I can do it by video. It's a civil case. I only have to come there once. If it's a jury trial, I'll still do it. And so he's like me now and has been since his appointment. He's on the road a lot, and he's covering a lot by video conference. And he's really chipping in far beyond just sitting in Pinedale and doing what needs to be done in Pinedale. The next agency is 142. I'm looking at DC page 111. That is Judge Bill Edelman, who is my colleague up in the 4th Judicial District. He's headquartered out of Johnson County in Buffalo, and he also fits that category. His workload, according to the workload study, is one of the lower ones, and he comes to Sheridan, helps out in Sheridan, We kind of try to divide it evenly and randomly within our district. And he also goes to Gillette. I think now he's going to Gillette weekly. And he also is going throughout the state like I am. And he's happy to do that and understands that's part of his obligation. That concludes the budget request of the district court conferences. One final issue I just kind of want to put in your ear to think about, and I'm sure you've heard about this, the Laramie County District Court judges are in the process of laying the groundwork to seek an additional judge in Laramie County. And it's kind of a which comes first, the courtroom or the judge, and they're working through that. I understand that there may be some effort that identifies the need. It's been supported by the district court conference, the board of judicial policy. He was in front of the joint judiciary committee about a month ago and reported to them. And I understand that it's not going to be funded this biennium. It's not requested to be funded, but there is an effort to sort of recognize that need and take that and go to the county and say, we have this need. Now you have to step up on your part for the courthouse and probably the next biennium or maybe even an interim session, there may be a request for that additional judge and funding that additional judge if it gets that far.
Mr. Coacher.
Mr. Chairman, I have filed that bill. The bill is kind of premised off of what happened in Casper. Basically, it recognizes the position, but it is not funded. And there's criteria for it in terms of county having to step up to the plate and have adequate facilities, and then it has to be signed off on by the Supreme Court for that additional judgeship. And then it also has provision, and they have to come back for an appropriation once they've accomplished that. But and I've met with the county commissioners in Cheyenne on it. They have a RFQ out right now, a request for qualifications to see who could, what kind of architect or engineers would be involved in determining what if there's space in the current facility or whether or not they're going to move the whole facility out to the Archer complex, which I think would be a very, very bad idea. But I've already given them my 2 cents on that. But we'll see. But that's kind of the nature of that bill. I'm just giving you a heads up, committee.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Coacher.
And that's exactly my understanding as well. And I would note, you know, we refer to this judicial workload study a lot. And I went through the process and spent a lot of time with this in getting the second judge up in my district. The workload study, I think, is fairly accurate. And it compared to some other ways that I looked at things just by population, by case filings. I kind of tried to skin a cat a number of different ways, and I kind of came to the same conclusions. That workload study shows that the district court judges are shy just under 5 judges right now. So we're about 20% below where this study says we should be. This adding judges we recognize is a big deal. And there's not only a judge, but there's a whole tail of staff that goes with it. There's public defenders, prosecutors, DFS workers. It impacts the legal community far beyond the budget that may be set forth for the position. That being said, I think I can represent to you, and I feel strong about this, that the district court judges are busy. They are down to a judge, hardworking, conscientious, wanting to do the right thing. And I'm very proud to be a member of the district court conference, and I'm proud of our membership. And when we come to you and ask for a new judge, it is not taken lightly from our side. We are not asking for 5 judges. We're not asking. We're kind of laying the groundwork for one more judge in Laramie County. And I hope that when that progresses further along, that you'll be able to support that. And again, it goes back to core civil, cornerstone of our civil society, a reasonably well-funded judiciary that can get people in and out in a fair and timely manner, either criminally or civilly or many of the other things that district court judges handle, is critical to the credibility of our system. And without that credibility, everything falls apart, and we see what is going on in other places in the world. It's just completely a lawless society. And even in our own country, in Chicago and Baltimore and St. Louis, we're seeing things that we don't want to see that trend happen in Wyoming. And I think part of that is there's no respect for the rule of law in our judiciary in those communities. And certainly I don't think I'm far from an expert, but if you go to Syria and some of those places in the world, there is clearly absolutely no respect whatsoever for a rule of law and compliance. And that's my soapbox, but that is how important this is, and we take it that seriously. It's a pleasure to be here. It's been enlightening. As a chair, I've participated in the Title 25 hearings. I've participated in the Joint Judiciary hearings, and now I've participated in these hearings. And I think every judge should have to do it, and fortunately we do it. A new judge does it every year, and it has been very enlightening. It's again, I appreciate the relationship that the District Court Conference has with the legislative body and the support that it's given the judiciary over the years. If there are no other questions, I know you're busy and want to do other things. So thank you very much for your time and attention and your consideration.
Okay. Thank you, Judge. Senator Burns.
I hope I don't embarrass Judge Fenn, but he's a friend of mine. But he is not the most celebrated Fenn in Sheridan at the moment. His daughter just finished up her fourth tennis season, four-time state champion, undefeated for 4 years in play in the state of Wyoming.
That's pretty impressive.
Thank you. I had very little to do with it. I stayed home, and they went off and played tennis. I can't help Judge or Senator Burns from commenting, too. I am a football fan. And,
here we go.
I am very proud of our Sheridan Bronx.
Yeah.
Judge Fenn, seeing as there is a Gillette senator to my right and the coach of Natrona County chairing the committee, I would suggest you keep your gloating down.
I will say. And I say this in great respect, and he probably doesn't know this, and I didn't learn about it until I saw an article about Representative Chairman Harshman in the Casper paper a few years ago. He was a member of the 1979 Midwest Championship team that beat the Big Piney Puncher second place team.
Beat them good, too.
In which I was a member of.
Yeah.
And I didn't know that till about 3 or 4 years ago.
33-0, I think.
I do not forget. Judge Harshman, excuse me, Representative Harshman, if you're in my district, request a different judge.
Well, and I appreciate that comment along with all the comments of fair and independent judiciary and rest assured appropriations will be fair as well. But no, congratulations on your kid and read that. She was like the player of the year and I think Gatorade player, all those things. And it's pretty awesome. Nothing
thank
better
you very
than
much.
Watching
I'm very proud
kids.
Of her. And,
yeah.
And she's a good kid.
She takes
that's
that
pretty awesome.
Yes, she does.
All right.
Thank
great.
You very
thank
much.
You,
I have
Judge.
Some questions for you.
We'll take a
– Since
sir.
We're having a jocular moment here, I just would like to point out that my friends in District 6 – the most conservative judge or the judge who spent many years in this legislative body cutting everybody's budget has the highest budget in Judicial 6. And that would be Judge Perry. So if you would point out to him that Wasserberger said, hey, Judge Perry, how come you're spending all that money up there?
Chairman, Senator Wasserberger, you're right, and I think he understands the system better than any of his other neophyte judges in the legislative process.
There you go.
So, again, thank you very much, and thank you for your hard work. I've been exposed to the legislature now. I usually stay in Sheridan and do my thing and I'm busy there, and And I had no idea how hard you work and what commitment you do sitting through these hearings. It's a new respect that I have for you, and I really appreciate the opportunity to be here and what you do, and look forward to the ongoing relationship that we have between the judiciary and the legislature.
Okay. Thank you, Judge. Travel safe. Thanks. Okay, we'll take just a five-minute stretch at our desk here.
or the speaky. Okay. If it's on, that or why blue red? And then you try not to have both of them on at the same time.
We start again. We've got a lot of problems on this side of our desks here. We've started this morning basketball league. Certainly no cameras or GPS devices allowed there, but so we're all sore, and we're into this sitting mode now, so we got to stretch a little bit. But appreciate it. So we're on to Agency 103, Board of Judicial Conduct and Ethics. So welcome. If you want to introduce yourselves and again, give us a summary, the rundown, and then we'll just basically page by page quickly, and we'll.
Yep. Thank you, Chairman Harshman, Co-Chairman Ross. Members of the committee, my name is Castine Conley. I'm the chairman of the Commission on Judicial Conduct and Ethics. With me today is Commissioner Barbara Diltz and Judge Norman Young. The commission is a vital part of Wyoming's judicial system, providing an avenue for citizens to grieve unethical behavior of Wyoming judicial officers, which includes the 58 full-time state-level judges and 100-plus part-time magistrates and municipal court judges. This 12-member volunteer commission has performed its work for a number of years without an increase to the budget. In fact, like other agencies, it has sustained budget reductions. I'm pleased to inform you that, again, we have no exception requests for this proposed budget. Since 2012, the commission has experienced significant change. Moving into state offices, using state services, including state mail, telecom, and ETS. Under the leadership of our current executive director, the commission institutes a number of cost-saving measures and has managed to continue its work without any exception requests. The commission is a responsible, conservative, one might say frugal, steward of taxpayers' money. It has, in fact, reverted large percentages of its budget back to the general fund for the last several bienniums. There are a number of reasons for those reversions, including 2 years in which there was no need to hire disciplinary counsel while at the same time recouping some funds for attorney's fees pursuant to negotiated agreements. However, it is important to tell you how unpredictable the workload of the commission can be. It is impossible to anticipate how many cases will be filed, how many will need to be investigated, and if cases will be significant, requiring more travel, more attorney's expenses. Nor can we anticipate how many significant cases will be filed during a biennium. For example, if you look at the Commission's annual report, which was provided to you in the handouts, you can see that in 2012, the Commission hired disciplinary counsel on 3 separate occasions. There are years when the commission may have 2 or more complex cases requiring significant funds to pay attorney's fees or for travel for investigation and for hearings. In contrast, in 2013 and 2014, there were no complex cases and thus no need to hire disciplinary counsel. In 2015, we have hired disciplinary counsel and have to date incurred significant attorney's fees. In closing, I can tell you that Wyoming citizens are fortunate to have a judiciary that is of the highest quality. Through my training as a commissioner, I have learned about the types of ethical cases in other jurisdictions, and I'm happy to report that we don't have that kind of problem as other states do. I also want to reiterate this language in the budget narrative that adequate funding is vital in order to provide for general operating expenses, proper training for commissioners and staff, and to hire independent disciplinary counsel. In order to prevent delay of disciplinary proceedings and interference with the commission's constitutionally mandated mission, at this time, I'd like to thank you and now turn over our brief presentation to Ms. Soto.
Okay, thank you.
Chairman Harshman, Co-Chairman Ross, and members of the committee, this is going to be very brief. I'm sorry, I will introduce myself. I'm Wendy Soto. I'm the Executive Director for the Commission. We're proposing a total budget of $367,340. We have no exception requests. The Commission's budget is essentially flat, with the exception of the recent appropriation for personnel services, which you've been discussing with other agencies. The Commission is simply proposing to rearrange some funds within the 200 series to better reflect its actual spending and to support a public education program that we're developing. Because the budget's so simple, I don't believe there's a need to go through it line by line unless you all want me to. But I'm happy to answer any questions.
I think, no, I don't think you need to go line by line, but I do think there are a few lines that you mentioned, and I think that we need to, and just looking at this, I'm on page 8, summary sheet. So the in-state travel has just been increased. And that'll require an exception request. That's not something you can just move to another. I don't know where that money. And then the same with office supplies has gone from zero to 480. And where did that money come from, I guess?
That's my first. Standard budget?
From the base budget to the standard budget. I'm looking at those changes.
Okay. The $480 excuse me, Chairman Harshman. The $480, we created a new line item. We actually, that is for capital protective services. Because in this last year, we've had a situation where we had a complainant who was making threats and caused some concern for the commissioners. They asked that we get a panic button in the office. I work alone. There are no other employees in the office, and we have a office sort of in the corner of the Hansen building. So we did do that and added a line item. It's really $480 that was moved from elsewhere in the budget. It's not an increase. It's just an additional line.
But I think, where did you move that from? I mean, that's what we do. We move things in the budget, and those come through exception requests, and then was there some kind of B-11 or some kind of?
No, I'm sorry.
Traveling. I don't know.
Mr. Chair?
Maybe we have some just topic. Go ahead,
just
Representative
looking,
Connolly.
At 420, that's going down $1,000.
I'm on page 8. The 221 series and the 230 series have both gone up.
And then 420 has gone down.
And 420 has gone down, as Representative Connolly points out.
In 207, Mr. Chairman, 207 has gone down. I was just curious as to why that was been
so
reduced.
Is Kevin or Don or some? Have any comments on?
Mr. Chairman, what they've done is they've netted to zero on their 200, and they did move some money up from their 400 into their 200. But technically, they can net to zero. They probably ought to ask us to move it from one object class to another. They did take a small amount from the 400 up to the 200, but basically the 200 net to zero, that would be no different than any other agency moving their money in Chapter 17 report across those, as long as it comes out to a zero balance.
In the 200 series.
In the 200 series.
But
in this case,
it was taken 400, from 400 to 200.
A small amount was moved up.
Very small amount.
And in that case, we probably ought to do an exception request in the future work with them on that.
Okay.
So is this a problem with their conduct or their ethics?
Actually,
Chairman,
yeah.
Chairman Harshman,
if we could get Judge Finn back in here, we could talk.
Chairman Harshman, we have in the last biennium, and this is my understanding through advice from my budget analyst, we could move money around in that 200 series to better, simply to better reflect our actual spending. It's there's no increase other than that $469, which we mistakenly moved from the 400 series funds into the 200 series. And I acknowledge that it was not my understanding that we could not do that. So that was a mistake, and we're prepared to.
Just we'll get that cleaned up then.
Okay.
And do it the right.
Mr. Chairman, we should have caught that and taken advice on
that. Yeah, no, but from this point on, now that it's our budget, we'll we'll work that deal. Okay, just so everybody's got it.
Mr. Chairman.
Representative Greer.
Just a quick question on the 900 series. Do we have those restricted, or do they get restricted here for their uses with this particular agency?
Can they be flexed? What's your question?
No, I'm asking what are they identified for. I know a lot of them be for attorney's fees.
Chairman Harshman.
Yeah, we can look at that.
Representative
Greer. Go ahead.
We generally use those for attorney's fees for professional services. I'm not sure that there is a restriction at this point. Those are typically what they're used for, and any funds that we do not use, we revert back, of course.
The restriction is really the statutory authority which they're appropriated to you. That's the restriction. And that's my opinion, the way I say it, see it or say it. Maybe we have a bevy of attorneys here on this committee.
Mr. Chairman, there's further restrictions on the 900. You can't move it up to 100.
Can't move it, no. I mean, and then used only for the statutory authority that
for what is intended
given.
To use.
And I don't have my.
How are you at lawyer
I don't think you need to worry about that.
Senator Burns, thank you for the advice.
Mr. Chair.
He is full of advice.
So, Mr. Chair, while we're doing that, I'd kind of like to see maybe like the last three or four years or four years of your actual budgets and then how much reverted back so we could get a feel for what that is.
Yes.
Chairman Harshman, Representative Nicholas, I can give you some information about the last three reversions.
Okay. You can just provide them to us.
And you want four years? Four?
Are there... I don't see, and I'm going to ask our staff, I don't see the 900 and 600 series. And maybe I just don't have it in my – they probably have it, but I don't have it.
Chairman Harshman, we gave you a memorandum as a handout. We don't receive any 600 series.
Right, okay, or 900 series is what –
And the memo says that the intended use of the 900 series appropriation remains essentially the same. It's to hire independent disciplinary counsel.
Okay.
To investigate and potentially prosecute disciplinary proceedings. Currently, those funds are also used to pay for services of a temporary clerical staff person who assists with some data entry and implementation of a case file management database. That person also does cover the office when I'm out on annual leave or sick leave or if I'm traveling for business.
Okay, so this is the handout, correct?
And
it's in the back of it. It's handout number.
That is our annual report, Chairman.
And then the
Harshman.
900.
We have a memorandum that should be attached as well.
Okay.
It's the second to the last page.
Yeah. Okay, we'll just take a minute and look at this for a second. Thank you. So as I read this last page, the grand total is $19,800 paid out of 900 series. Is that
in this biennium?
Yes.
I think it's actually a little higher, Chairman Harshman. I think it's exceeds 20,000 at this point, but
okay. 20,554. Looked like there was a decrease of 672 for a grand total of 19,880.
Chairman Harshman, can you tell me where you're?
I'm just looking at the last page of your handout. That would be your second page of your memo, I guess. Okay. No, I don't have any questions, members. Anybody have any? And I'm answered, and I think Representative Nicholas had that question for a little bit of homework if we get a little more information on a little historical.
Chairman Harshman and Representative Nicholas, can you tell me again, you want the reversions, most recent reversions, and what was the other question? Of reversions.
Okay. Okay, perfect. Members, any questions? Okay, thank you very much.
Thank you.
Okay, next we're on agency 102. Board of Law Examiners. Get that pulled up. Go ahead. Welcome to the Joint Appropriations Committee.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. My name is John Masterson. I'm the chairman of the Board of Law Examiners. On my right is Sharon Wilkinson, the executive director of the Wyoming State Bar. And hiding in the back is Kathy Dunsell. She's the admissions director for the Wyoming State Bar. So they're also available to answer questions that may come up. Essentially, Mr. Chairman, and members of the committee, the Board of Law Examiners administers the bar exam for the state of Wyoming, but there's more to it than that. We're involved in training at the NCBE that administers the Uniform Bar Exam. If there's an appeal, someone fails their character and fitness, they can appeal to us. We oversee that committee. Meet monthly to conduct business and approve people for admission. That's essentially what we do. Here is the really, really great news. The budget for the Board of Law Examiners is paid for by the admission fee or by the application fee that individuals pay to take the Wyoming State Bar Exam. And those funds are placed in a special revenue account. Not only do we not have an exception request, we don't request any funds from the general fund either. But what we do need from you is permission, authorization to spend those funds that are in that special revenue account for the business of the Board of Law Examiners. You'll see from the sheet that you have, at this point in time, that would be $178,750 for the biennium to cover all the expenses of administering and doing all the things that we do. Mr. Chairman, at the risk of making us sound less than significant because of the brevity of the presentation, that's what we're looking for.
Okay, Mr. Chairman. I think we just need to find exactly the pages, and it's in the middle of the Supreme Court.
Yeah, if you go to it's at page 101, 99.
Just before the district courts. Let us just.
There's a tab for it.
Called law examiners.
unless you're on the computer.
Imagine that.
Ask a question, Mr. Chairman.
Us high-tech guys are fine out here real quick. Mr. Co-Chair.
Thank you. Can you give me an update? I mean, there was a lot of furor in the bar over the bar exam and the change in which was implemented to going to a national exam vis-a-vis utilizing a Wyoming test. How's it going? What are your results? Are you seeing better? Pass rate out of the University of Wyoming Law School? What can you tell us about that?
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, I joined the Board of Law Examiners. The first exam I graded was a uniform bar exam, but I'm certainly aware of the concerns that were raised in going to a uniform bar exam instead of a specifically one tailored for Wyoming. The old Wyoming bar exam from what they call a test integrity point of view was very, very difficult to support, because it was written by the examiners. They did, the questions were brutal, I'm sure, as most people who are attorneys on this body would tell you. But if we had ever been challenged, on it, it could have been, difficult. We went to the uniform bar exam in 2013. It's a much more comprehensive, way of testing. It's a standardized national exam. There are now 18 states, thank you, that give the uniform bar exam. We were the 12th, and the latest one to join was New York State. So I think you're seeing a trend towards more and more states adopting the uniform bar exam. But, I think there's still, some people who would like to see more Wyoming-directed and Wyoming-specific questions. But I also think that the uniform bar exam does a good job of assessing whether or not someone can undertake the tasks and do the things that we need to do as lawyers. You asked about the pass rate, Mr. Chairman. We have a sheet on it. In July of 2015, that's the last exam. The overall pass rate was 65%. February of 2015, it's given twice a year, so we grade in February and July, or it's given in February and July. February 2015, 83%, 75% in July of 2014, 63% in February of 2014. So if you look back at the historic scores, you know, you go up a little bit, you go down a little bit, but I think it's still in that same neighborhood overall.
Okay. I'm just looking on page LE5, I guess, looking at your budget sheet. So as you look down all the different codes, and so you get and you look at your standard budget, but is the office equipment furnishings for $38,400. How usually that's not a standard budget item, and maybe we ought to probably talk about that. How?
And Christy can address that.
Mr. Chairman, if I can defer.
Oh, absolutely.
Thank you.
Mr. Chairman, I apologize for having to butt in again. That is one of the technical errors
that is
in our budget. Yes, that was one of the three.
So let me go over to that.
That coding is incorrect. It should be 0251.
Okay.
Which is real property rental.
So let me type that note in, 0251. That was one of your three that you talked about earlier today. Perfect. Okay. Any other questions?
Mr. Chairman?
Representative Stepson.
I was wondering if you've seen, since you've gone to the UMB, if you've seen any impact on the number of admissions. Have you seen it increase the folks that are applying for admission in the state of Wyoming?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Stubson, yes, we have. As you know, those scores are portable. So if someone takes a score in another UBE state and then makes the threshold for Wyoming, they can transfer into Wyoming. So yes, we have seen an increase in the number of people who are seeking their Wyoming license, whether it's by motion, exam. You total them up, we're flirting with 200 people the last 2 years.
We used to average about 100 per year, and now we are seeing that double, a lot of out-of-state members now.
Okay, Representative Conley.
Thanks, Mr. Chair. And I'm curious, can you use graders from out-of-state now that it's a uniform exam?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Connolly, could you ask that again? I'm sorry.
Can you use graders from outside of Wyoming?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Connolly, we can use the grades from out of state, but you mean people to actually grade the exam? I don't know. We're the five people charged by statute to grade the Wyoming component, so it's never come up.
Mr. Chairman, follow up. Yeah. I
meant the Wyoming version, the Wyoming
uniform bar
exam. Yeah. So there's no longer a specific Wyoming directed component. I'm sorry.
Yeah, Mr. Chairman, Representative Connolly, even though it's a national exam, our five members of the Board of Law Examiners, they travel to Madison, Wisconsin, where the National Conference of Bar Examiners is headquartered, and they're trained on how to grade, and then they're looking at a pool of all national exams. But it's my understanding that every state grades its own exam. Their own Board of Law Examiners grades their own exams. But I don't know if that's a possibility to have out-of-state graders. That's just never come up before, but I don't know. I don't think that's being done in any state.
Okay. Thank you. Mr. Chair, just one more follow-up.
Sure.
I'm curious about when the multi-state was multiple choice, so now the uniform, and then there was the Wyoming portion.
Mm-hmm.
Is the written portion of the uniform exam about the same amount of grading? And so you use your professional services fees to pay for graders. But I'm curious if that writing portion is the same as the former Wyoming portion of the exam.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Connolly, if I may, you said that professional services was being used to pay the graders. If the professionals, that's not for paying the graders, for paying us. It's pretty much a volunteer position to be on the Board of Law Examiners, just so you know. I'm not sure many people would share that, but you're welcome.
Mr. Chairman, on that point, I was going to ask John. I mean, since you don't have to write the test anymore, we can drop your statutory $10 a day compensation down, can't we?
Well, so much for getting it amended up, I guess. I think that to close the loop on your question about out-of-state graders, I think the way the statutes are now, and I had to take a quick glance down, we're created by statute, and you need to have Wyoming members of the bar grade the Wyoming test. So I think that would be kind of difficult to do. The question about the essay exam, I can't speak to the time that was required when there was a Wyoming specific part. It had to have been more because the Board of Law Examiners wrote them. But I know that now a day and a half to grade 50 exams is about right. But you've got the multiple choice test, and then you've got the professional responsibility test. We grade the written exam, which is going to be six topics, chosen out of a pool of, I don't know how many, but six exams. And then there's also two things they call the professional, help me.
The multiple performance test.
Multiple performance test. The acronyms get really thick. But those are essentially practical problems. They give you a task to do, write a memo, write a complaint, here's the law. Here's the facts. So there's actually eight separate little components that the five graders will grade.
Okay. Any other questions? Okay. Anything else?
Just our thanks, Mr. Chairman.
Okay. Well, thank you. Appreciate Appreciate you being here today. Thank you. Okay. I think we take just a 2-minute stretch at your desk to stand up, stretch, get your water while we transition to Agency 157. No.
Three of us would go in and run. And it's funny, I took the bar with this one guy. Went in there, yeah. Seems that the first two times he liked us from Martin, he got a 69% each time.
Okay, yeah, I just slipping it somewhere.
Thank you. Good job, yeah.
Yeah, good job.
Likewise. Yeah. Hey, how are you?
Doing okay. Okay. What's that? Oh, yeah, that's some other stuff.
Yeah, we're
doing okay. It's the same old thing.
Well, Lynette, she worked so hard for me. I was coming, and I don't have to stay hard, but I learned my contacts.
Just barely.
We're on agency 157. We're all getting our budgets pulled up.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee. My name is Mike Blonigan. I'm the district attorney in Casper for Natrona County. I think I'm familiar with most of you, but I've been a prosecutor for about 32 years. I've been the elected since 2003. And we have made a genuine effort through that time period to avoid expansion. We have not asked for a new attorney position since I've been the district attorney, and we're not asking for an attorney position now. I would tell you that as we go forward into either the next interim budget or the next biennium, that a critical issue is arising with salaries of experienced attorneys in the prosecution field, and particularly the inequalities that exist between the prosecutor's offices and the Office of the Public Defenders. I have substantially more experienced people making $20,000 and $30,000 a year less than less experienced public defenders than that are leaving the office, walking around the corner, and representing those very same public defenders in claims of ineffective assistance of counsel. The inequities are growing, and I expect they will become worse. It is beginning to wear on your ability to maintain and retain a core group of people. I've been doing this for 32 years. I believe in career prosecution. I don't believe everybody's a career prosecutor. I do believe you have to have a core of career prosecutors in your office that can take care of the difficult cases and represent the people of Wyoming effectively.
I'm sorry. I didn't mean to interrupt. Your people are making $20,000 per year less than who?
The public defenders.
Than the public defenders.
Yes, thank Senator you. Burns, Mr. Chairman. And actually that needs to be more fully studied. I just, when you look at these issues and issues that are coming up, I will refer to that a couple of times in expenditures. I was involved in a case in Laramie County with a double homicide attempt at murder, where I have knowledge that the public defender's office spent more than $1 million on the case. And in doing so, three different sets of attorneys, each hiring a Cadillac team of different psychologists and mitigation experts along the way. We fight to get $5,000-$10,000 to get an expert to come in an area we need them in. So those are things that we're going to address. But I think going through the budget, there are six exception requests. The governor has indicated approval of one but denial of the rest. The budget division indicated denial of the positions but approval of the rest. So there seems to be a split in there. The budget itself continues to be fairly constant. You'll find either whether you go with base budget, standard budget, or exceptions request, it is about $350,000 per biennium less than the only comparable office, which is the Laramie County District Attorney's Office. We have 19 positions presently. We lost one position a couple of years ago. Because of budget cuts, we had a person retiring and felt that was, if we had to cut a position, to cut the person that was retiring. However, that's proved particularly problematic. In looking at the numbers, and our numbers are high, I know Cheyenne's numbers are high, but in looking at it, I don't think it's necessarily a problem of lack of attorneys. I think it may be a bigger problem with lack of handling information, processing information in cases, and making sure those attorneys are practicing laws rather than looking for files or other things like that. And that is why when we ask for new positions, we concentrate it more on support staff funding. When the position was cut a couple years ago, what happened is each of those legal assistants now has to spend a day on the phone. Well, you not only have a break in attention to that, and yes, we do have to have somebody on the phone. We're a public office. People come to our office. They have no idea who they want to talk to. We have a juvenile diversion program we have to run. Courts frequently send people, having an automatic voicemail system, when most of these folks don't even know who they're supposed to talk to, is not going to be very beneficial. This person also does a lot of other paperwork, including juvenile diversion and other things. Well, we mix that through. And so essentially what you have is you have seven legal assistants, and they're each taking a day out in rotation to cover those duties where they're not covering other duties. A second problem you have in Natrona County is the rocket docket, as we call it. In Natrona County, you're expected to go to trial within 60 days of arraignment on felony cases, except for certainly homicides and things like that are different, but most felony cases, and all misdemeanor cases. We do try a large number of cases, including circuit court cases. What this means is we have a vast amount of material we have to process, get filed, and out to other attorneys and things on a relatively short time schedule. And what is occurring presently is we simply don't have adequate support staff to do that. If you had adequate support staff to do that, you wouldn't have attorneys running around for looking for things, getting things out at the last minute and things like that. Lots of stacks of files on the desk of my office. There's over 3,500 new files opened every year in my office. We don't even open files on traffic matters and things like that. So there's a lot of files to be gotten through. Secondly, you got a lot more data coming in than you used to. You know, we tape record all interviews now, whether they're witnesses or defendants from start to finish. We bring them in. We interview them. We have all those videos to get out. We have dash cam videos. We may soon have body camera videos. We may have multiple jurisdictions involved. So the problem is getting all this data processed in a timely manner and getting it out. And the support staff is simply overwhelmed. We were hoping we would be able to absorb that cut, but in fact, it's proven just the opposite. It's starting to impact our work product. We are starting to hear complaints from judges. You know, lawyers complain, but they always complain. But when judges start complaining, you're not getting it done. You're not getting it out there. This is causing us problems. That's a real issue. So when you look at the exception request, the first two exception requests I directed to are the two exceptions requests for support staff. The other thing I note about support staff is if you can do the job with support staff instead of attorneys, it's a lot cheaper. You know, you're not paying the salary to them that you might pay to an attorney. The first one is the receptionist position that we talked about previously. That is listed as exception request number one. This is will cost an expenditure of approximately $95,000 a year. These are set out starting at page 13 of the budget. This person, again, would take over those duties previously performed and release the legal assistants to go back and do more of their work that they need to do to get stuff done. They're not going to be taking that roughly one day a week out and going back and trying to catch up with things. As I indicated, as of course with all positions, you know, it's 40 or 50% fringe benefit, as we find out with so much of this fringe cost. That was approved by the governor's office and recommended. This is the position, again, that was removed a couple of years ago as part of the budget cuts. The second exception was for another legal assistant. And, again, this is outlined as priority number two in the proposed budget on page 13. This individual, we talk a little bit about caseloads in there. And strict counting of the caseloads is kind of not always the best indicator of work because it tends to equate the simple drunk driving case with a homicide case, and you can't really equate those cases. But the felony and misdemeanor cases are now spread evenly throughout those legal assistants that are within the office, and they have an incredibly high volume. You're talking about somewhere around close to 450 cases a year each one of them are handling. And they got to organize that information, get it out, and get it out on the timeline I talked to you about. They're simply becoming overworked. I would say this. We find that the compensation of the state is very competitive with local private attorneys on this particular level. In fact, I'm sure that Mr. Stubson could probably address that. But this is simply a problem of if you get the information out, the attorney can do attorney work instead of doing staff work. And I think if with the increase in the staff positions, that would be particularly helpful and would help us decrease some of these complaints we're getting. The second part of that is you can't get rid of cases if the attorneys don't have the information. You know, they got to have the information if they're going to advise their client, you know, take a deal, to go to trial or whatever. And they're not going to do that until they get the information. In Natrona County, we have 2 jury trial stacks per week in circuit court. It is not that uncommon for us to try 2 circuit court jury trials in a week. We have district court jury stacks 3 weeks out of every month. And by stack is what I mean, if some of you aren't familiar with that, there's like 10 cases on there. If number one goes, the next 9 roll down to the next stack. If number one goes off, then number 2 goes, and so on. And so we not only have to be ready for those cases one at a time, we have to deal with the stack system. And, in fact, I think that's probably the proper system, where we would just get so backlogged that you would never get things to trial in a timely manner. The legal assistant is intended to increase the efficiency on that, make sure the cases are ready to go to trial. So you're reaching a proper disposition based on the evidence and the facts before you, not on the fact that, well, you didn't get that report out, now you're not going to be able to use that evidence or considerations like that. I do believe that the attorney resources in my office are adequate if the staff support is adequate. And as I indicated, I think it's probably easier to deal with from an economic point of view than hiring an attorney. The next ones are relatively
Mr. Blonigan, the legal assistant priority number 2, is that person a paralegal? I mean, are they certified paralegals or are they just assistant?
Mr. Chairman, Senator Ross, they are not required to hold a certificate. They perform similar function. And as you know, as an attorney, the term paralegal is kind of they're not going to do legal research and things like that, like some paralegals do. This is going to be handling, managing discovery, though. That's the big time consumer. The second thing that's time consuming is, I don't know of any other system where the court doesn't produce its own order. But in most of Wyoming, including in Natrona County, guess who gets to prepare all the orders in criminal cases? It's the Office of the District Attorney. So those are the 2 things that really keep our legal assistants hopping, is you got to produce those orders, you know, and do it in a fairly timely manner. And secondly, you got to manage all this discovery. So I've suggested the court take over completing the orders. They don't seem too excited about that process. Those are the 2 exception requests. It's been asked, I know, on previous occasions. If you had to pick one of those, you know, which one would you prioritize? I would say the first one, because that would free the legal assistants to do further work on other areas. It's less expensive. And I think if that was the question asked, I think that would be – that's why it's priority number 1 instead of priority number 2. The other exceptions are relatively small. And as I indicated, it's rather interesting. Budget deny or recommended adopting all these. The governor's office denied them, and we're really never given an explanation why. Data processing and other computer equipment. This was based on ETS's recommendation and schedule. And you can see the ETS numbers are there to check that out. We're not given a reason for that, although I do know a similar request by Laramie County was approved. What we had done as they set up ETS and indicated to us what their schedule is going to be is we tried to do our replacement schedule for one set of, for attorneys and victim witness, one biennium, legal assistance and similar support the next. So you don't have nothing one biennium, then a whole bunch the next biennium. This tends to level it out. This is to keep up with the schedule established by ETS's policy. And that's what our recommendations were based on. what I think is if we pass on this, the problem is, well, there's two problems actually. Technology moves so fast these days that are the one set of computers going to be completely compatible with everything else we do on the other set of computers? The second thing is it simply delays for another year or two coming back and asking for more money to replace the same machines. So it seems to me that if you keep this on the schedule where you're doing one biennium and the other's the next, that seems to be more practical to me. It's not to buy anything special or new. You know, they're new laptops, things like that. It's nothing very big right there. Shelving units. This is a one-time expenditure. It sounds like kind of a minor thing, but storage of records is a real headache for us. We produce a lot of paper. I mean a lot of paper. And it's a lot of paper we have to hang on to under the Public Records Act. The commissioners did find us some new storage space right on our floor that we can use to go into the new area. We've filled our other two areas. In this, though, they will not provide the shelving, which is, quite frankly, consistent with the statute. Statute requires provision of office space. In fact, they could deny us the storage space for that matter. It doesn't include equipment, and this is equipment. This is a one-time expenditure. This is really a bonus for us as far because they were talking about removing these files to a remote location. Well, we have to access these files continually. As you know, there are statutes passed by this body, third time, things like that, probation revocations. And so we actually got some room right on the same floor as us. Also, when you send people out driving on icy roads and things like that to remote locations, your workers' comp risk goes up. You know, if somebody's driving to that location, slides into a light pole, you know, workers' comp is going to come into play. Third, I don't know if you ever picked up a banker's box full of paper. It's not light. And there's also a risk without proper shelving that, A, you're going to be violating fire code. And, in fact, we were told we were violating fire code, and if we did not ameliorate the situation, we would be ticketed because we ran out of storage space. We had stuff stacked in the halls. Well, Mr. Chairman, Representative Nicholas, perhaps we could refer it to you. But the other thing is there's fire – you can only stack boxes so high because the sprinklers will be interfered with. There's a lot of different things. And you got people slinging around these big, heavy boxes. They got to be able to get to them. These are basic shelving units. They're not sliding or anything like that or electric or anything like that. They're shelves. And they also disperse the weight over the surface of the floor so there's not too much weight concentrated in one area of the floor. So structurally, I doubt the commissioners would allow us to put all those boxes in there without some sort of proper shelving. We simply don't have that kind of money in our budget.
Senator Burns?
$11,000, frankly, sounds kind of salty for shelving.
Go ahead.
Mr. Chairman, Senator Burns, yes, it does, but this isn't, you know, this is pretty heavy-duty stuff. And we checked with several different outlets before they did this. We checked with who the county had used in our other storage areas, which are pretty basic. I mean, they're metal and wood shelves. They're, as I say, they're not electric or sliding or anything like that. They're fixed shelves made out of metal and wood. And this is about as low as we could find to cover that area and take that many boxes.
Does that include going to just to Walmart or Sam's Club or something?
Mr. Depot. Chairman, Senator Burns, I don't believe those would probably be adequate. They simply – you think about stacking a couple of dozen boxes full of paper, banker's box full of paper. You have to have, you know, a pretty stout unit that's going to take weight like that. And as I said, we were also told by the commissioners it's necessary they disperse that weight as they sit in that area. They can't be just – you know, and they can't be stacked to the ceiling. And people have to get them down. I mean, you're sending in a 110-pound legal assistant to drag boxes down, you know. They got to be able to do it. But, yes, I thought it was pretty pricey, too. But when we shopped around, we found that that was pretty much the minimum.
Mr. Chairman, the Sutherlands is going out of business here, and they've got some heavy-duty shelving on their dirt cheap.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Nicholas, of course, I wasn't aware of that, but – We did look at this when we made the budget request. And, again, I'm not sure that shelving would necessarily be built for the kind of stuff we're doing. It really is quite heavy stuff when you start slinging that paper around. Yeah. So that is that's priority number five, four. Priority number five is another unfunded federal mandate. The Indian Child Welfare Act requires us to send registered notice to tribes and others anytime there is any suspicion that a child taken into the Child Protective Services system may be of Indian ancestry. They do not have to be an enrolled member. And in fact, we had trouble in Wyoming with instances where ICWA was not fully complied with, and it caused some real problems legally. What that has meant is that we get these mailings in our juvenile system that cost us a couple hundred bucks apiece. It's fairly, you know, often for no good purpose. But the federal law requires these notices to be done. Otherwise, once you can have some real, and if they've expressed an interest, frankly, and they can show that the person's of Indian blood and had some connections to that tribe, they're entitled to walk right into your courtroom and take the case, whether your judge wants it done or not. And if you don't do that, then all your actions are invalid. You face other potential consequences for that, including loss of federal funding. And again, I'm not quite sure why this was denied. This is something we can't avoid. If we're going to have a juvenile justice system, we got to do ICWA notices. ICWA is an ill-founded piece of legislation beyond any doubt, but it's something that we have to comply with. And, you know, that's why we request $5,000 a year. That is what our expenses have been running to. And if you think about that, at $200 to $400 a shot, it doesn't take that many cases before you're running up on $5,000. It really doesn't. You know, that money has to come from somewhere, and we simply don't have a lot of squeeze in this budget right now. And I would bet that this is a problem not only for us, but for many of the counties around the state who are also facing this expense.
Mr. Chairman, yeah, Representative Conley.
Thanks. Mr. Blonigan, how many of these cases did you have last year?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Conley, I could get a precise number for you, but my estimate would be about 35. Some of those not requiring quite the same effort as all these. Sometimes, particularly with the local reservation, you're a little more knowledgeable about who needs to be talked to exactly and noticed. If it's an out-of-state connection, though, you're kind of shooting in the dark sometime. I mean, it literally might be somebody showing up and say, well, I think my grandparent was Cherokee. I mean, that's all it takes. And you're required by law to start doing these notices. So DFS bears, I would say, it bears a lot of the brunt of this expense, but not the mailings and things. Those mailings must come from us because we're the person filing the juvenile action. So,
did you have a follow-up?
Yeah, I do. Thanks, Mr. Chair. And Mr. Blonigan, why $200? I thought certified mail was $10 or less.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Connolly, because in many of those cases, you literally do not know where to send it. So you send it everywhere. You might send it to three or four. You know, if somebody was to say, I was of Sioux descent, can you be any more specific? Well, no, I can't. Are you an enrolled member everywhere, anywhere? No. Any member of your family an enrolled member anywhere? No. Okay, now how many, just take South Dakota, North Dakota, Nebraska, Minnesota. How many notices do I have to send? You know, and oftentimes more than one person at each one of those reservations. So that's why you see that amount. It does seem like a lot of money. It is a lot of money. And, frankly, it's not money well spent, but it's money we're required to spend.
Mr. Chairman.
Senator Burns.
You were saying that if the mailings are not set out properly, then a tribal court can come in and take over the case?
No, Mr. Chairman, Senator Burns, they can take over the case anyway.
Regardless.
Yes, regardless. But if you don't send them out, what it means is two things. One, you've got a child, you put them in some programming, you got parents and things in programming, and somebody steps in and takes over the whole system, you know, whatever's going on. The third thing is we have some concerns. Our second thing is sometimes we have concerns over what kind of treatment those children are going to get on the reservation. I'm sorry, but there's some problems.
Has that happened in any of your cases since you've been DA?
Chairman Harshman, Senator Burns, I can't tell you a specific case right now. We do know instances where they went to those agencies and were subject to further abuse by the parents. We know of instances where they were turned over to relatives who were abusive to them. Fortunately, none of those ones where you go, oh, wow, we got a dead kid on our hands, like happened in Fremont County not so very long ago.
Okay.
You know, again, I'm not saying it's money well spent. It's just money sometimes you have to spend. And
Mr. Chairman?
Yeah, go ahead, Ms. Kocher.
Yeah, that's interesting. Is there other cases other than juvenile cases that you have to comply with ICWA? I mean, that's all I've heard today.
Mr. Chairman, Senator Ross, I only know of it applying to juveniles. I don't know of any authority to apply it to anything else. The last item is an increase in professional cost. Our 900 series is where we usually pay for professional services, including expert services. It has for a couple of bienniums been at $53,000 a biennium. I was telling some of the members I was involved in a case in Cheyenne where I know the public defender's office spent over $1 million in a case. The problem we have here is I told you earlier we now videotape all these things. Well, they got to be edited, though, and they got to be copied. And not so much copied. We can do the copying. It's the editing and things like that, because the problem is, okay, it's great to videotape a suspect from the moment he enters the interview room. Best way to do it. Solved a lot of problems for us, you know, as far as challenges to statements and things like that. But the problem is he starts talking to the detective something like this. Well, the last time you guys sent me to prison, so you have all this stuff, but you get a lot of irrelevant stuff. You get a lot of dead time on the you might have the detectives get into areas they shouldn't under the law. And what we find increasingly is it's a great tool, but you got to edit these things. And it's incredibly time-consuming until we have another tech problem we're working on for the last budget. Even if they can be completed by the legal assistant, they take an incredibly long period of time. The professional services, it's real simple. Our legal assistant prepares a transcript. You have the editing. The attorney goes through it, does the editing. They place it, and they cut out all that stuff that's objectionable or just a waste of time, you know, or maybe you're discussing something totally unrelated to the case. And we get this with both witnesses and defendants, and it's incredibly, I think, important to have those things videoed because it solves a lot of issues about who said what, when, how, under what circumstances. But they have to be edited. And that is the request for $10,000 increase in the 901 series is to get that done. And, for instance, if I tried a homicide case in December, I probably had six of these that needed to be edited. My office manager actually works also as my legal assistant on my cases. And she could give you the total hours that it took her to do that. But it was around 20 to 25 hours. There's a lot of back and forth, making sure it cuts cleanly so it's not misleading, you know, making sure everything's out that has to be out. And if we simply have someone else do that, that means, again, staff is doing something other than just that one project for the better part of half a week. And that is the purpose of that request. I think mainly it was denied because it's a new expense. We have never listed an expense like that before, including in our 900 series. Those are the exception requests. I think the total of all exception requests was $270,000. I did make a note, I think, somewhere that the only comparable budget is the Laramie County Attorney's Office budget. We could have every one of these exception requests. We still wouldn't be close to what their budget – well, we would be close, but we wouldn't be what their budget is. So I'll leave that for Jeremiah to answer. But
how about – oh, go ahead. Any questions? Representative Burkhart.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Blanding, I do have a couple questions.
Okay.
I noticed in the narrative you'd indicated you have one attorney paid through high-intensity drug trafficking area grants, but that doesn't appear to me in your budget. Mm-hmm. Could you explain that and the two, I think you have two youth division officers paid out of grant money. None of those three appear in the budget itself.
If I can, Mr. Chairman, Representative yep. Burkhart, we've had the HIDTA position for approximately 15 years, and we were advised over the years not to include that in our budget, that it was there's no state funds expended on it whatsoever. So we were simply acting on what we've been told over the last 15 years. As to the two diversion officers, let me be clear about that. The diversion officers are not paid by grant through our office. We simply provide the office space, and we provide a place for those kids to come through and be interviewed and be processed. In addition, of course, with the juvenile screening system, we're going to talk about their cases. One of my attorneys at the screening process. So we're not paying any of those salaries are paid by the ones from the Cache Police Department, ones from the Sheriff's Office. They pay all salaries, all benefits.
Okay, Mr. Chairman. So those two people aren't your employees, aren't your part of your staff?
Yes, Mr. Chairman, Representative Burkhart, that's correct.
Okay.
There is one other grant position, though, in the budget, and that is a victim witness person who's paid they're federal funds, but they pass through the state, that is paid as a victim witness person specifically on sexual assault and domestic violence cases. And, again, that position is 100% funded by that process and not the budget process.
Okay. Mr. Chairman,
yep.
The reason I ask, and I guess I'd ask for staff input on this, we're used to at least appropriating any federal grant monies through the budget process and that. And you're indicating you've never had to.
No.
I would ask staff for their thoughts on that.
Are these positions being B11'd in each year?
Yes. Yes, sir, they are.
That's the explanation, because high-intensity drug trafficking area of money, there's no guarantee. And we have a NAFR documentation that we have that we want to make sure that when the federal government provides us funding in the beginning that there's a reasonable surety that it's going to be there forever. And in high-intensity drug trafficking, I think the total amount that the state of Wyoming has been receiving is on the decline. So I think that position would be B11 again with the surety of the money.
If I may, Mr. Chairman, I can speak to that somewhat because I'm on the HIDTA Board of Directors for Rocky Mountain, including the Budget Committee. So while there has been some decline in the positions assigned to DCI, the position assigned to our office and has been for 15 years has, like I said, it's been there 15 years. It doesn't appear to be going away right soon anyway, at least during this biennium. We did once have a support staff person. That person went away in the cuts about 10 years ago. Laramie County has one position and plus a support staff person from the same funding. And, again, at least for the biennium, that appears that money is sound. HIDTA is actually one of the few bipartisan popular programs in Washington, and we tend to do pretty well through that. The great thing about that is I undoubtedly would be here every year asking for that position. You figure that position probably saved the state of Wyoming $150,000 a year minimum over 15 years. So if we can continue that funding, we certainly want to, rather than coming to you, we want to do that.
Okay. Mr. Chairman.
Go ahead. Okay.
Mr. Blanigan, you mentioned something just before I started asking some questions about your caseload, your staff compared to, say, Laramie County. How do they compare?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Burkhart, they're close. There's always been some differences in the offices from when they were starting clear back in 1982. But they have an investigator. We do not. They have a higher funding level than we do, as I indicated. They are probably getting a little busier than us. We used to be the busiest jurisdiction in the state. I think Laramie County is probably edging ahead of us. There's not a drastic difference. They do have, I believe, if you look at the number of positions allocated, ours is presently 19 Under the governor's recommendation, it goes to 20. Under the exception request, it goes to 21. And you can compare that to the budget you'll hear next and see what those positions are.
You know, I've just been kind of flipping back and forth. You know, positions are pretty close. They've got one or two more positions, and your 100 series is pretty close, but it's a real big change in the 900, the contractual services. Laramie County's 179,000 and Trona's 53,000. Why do you think such big difference in those 900 series? I mean, what would you do? Are those expert? I didn't even look. Those are expert witnesses.
Well, if I may, Mr. Chairman, as I recall, they run some different things through that 900 series than we do.
We'll have a look at it, yeah.
I do believe, I'm not sure if they actually have it allocated to expert witnesses, but I recall when Mr. Homar and Mr. Forward were district attorney, it seems like we had this conversation, and they were running, I think there was a case management program they were maybe running through there. I'm not sure exactly, but it is more, but I'm not sure that it's all just for professional services.
Well, I wonder if, I mean, it's got to have some kind of statutory authority. I wouldn't think we'd do something different. Maybe we have. I don't know. But so I've got them both in front of me looking at them here. I think looks like in Casper you've got, if I've got this right now, I want to make sure I got this right. You've got expert witness fees, expert witness fees, trial prep, controlled substance identification, witness lodging and meals, trial prep for pictures, phone book advertising with Dix Media, and then, you know, for seven, express printing and or commercial printing and is really it. And then looking at in Laramie County, it looks like it's Roy's Tech Works, computer services, and then legal services. But,
and Mr. Chairman,
I
mean, there's some other minor differences. I know they have a larger travel budget even when you account for the car that's assigned to our agency, but it's not a huge difference.
Yeah.
And we've been able to accommodate that. We have some partners, and we're able, they will defray some of our education costs and things, and we pay part, they pay part. So if we have a child abuse thing, maybe our CAP team's going to kick in part of that. If we have drug court, maybe they're going to kick in a little bit to help us. And we've been able to keep out-of-state travel expenses down but still get some good training to our people. So.
Yeah, there is a pretty big difference in those budgets.
But I would note again, Mr. Chairman, on the in-state travel, we also have the assigned vehicle.
You got the assigned vehicle.
So that offsets part of that difference.
Right, where you can get instead of the motor pool. Mm. Okay. Any other questions? Anything else you need to? How is the state of, you know, all this, your caseload, types of cases, are they?
I think we're pretty stable in Natrona County, Mr. Chairman. You wouldn't know that. Sometimes the media gets a little carried away, but when the Casper Star is stuck doing stories on misdemeanor cases for something to fill the paper, I think that's a pretty good sign. You know, I think there are some benefits being paid out. We really see it as our juvenile probation program. We started several years ago. The school district's advising us, you know, sometimes as many as 15 years, kids a year or more graduating. Our biggest thing is keep them in school, keep them sober. I mean,
yeah.
I think the early intervention idea is still where the solutions lie. I am very concerned about DOC's recommendations that we get out of jail free cards to repeat offenders. You know, a guy might be forging checks, but you know, if it's his eighth time around, your citizens have a right to be protected from that. And, yeah. when they want to send violent offenders back out on the street, when they want to parole people particularly who kill their wives and children, there's nobody watching over that. And, when they come here with a proposal this year and they tell you these people, quote, don't need to be in prison. It's interesting. It's from the same organization who told us 25 years ago that if we started incarcerating more people, crime rate would just continue to skyrocket. Well, it didn't. It dropped like a rock.
Yeah, it dropped like crazy.
And the same organization, the Pew Commission, which said 3 or 4 years ago we had a flat to slightly declining prison population for the last 3 years. So suddenly, I guess we got 500 people from someplace. this is an increasing problem is not so much our caseload, and I think you'll hear this again in the next presentation. A case is never finished now. I don't know quite how we work that into the statistics for you. But Department of Corrections is not recommending revocation on people on probation that violate multiple times. I had one recent felony drug defendant on probation, 7 positive UAs before they reported it to anybody. The parole board lets people out. We have no control over it. I had an aggravated vehicular homicide. Guy had 4 prior DUIs when I convicted him of aggravated vehicular homicide for killing another man. Had a DUI within 6 months of his release from prison. They took him back, sent him to treatment, put him right back out on the street. Had a second DUI just last year. They didn't even revoke him. So, you know, I'm worried that when we get back to this, we're going to start seeing more career offenders. The guys that just won't learn. There's some people you can work with. There's some people you can't. You know, but it seems to me that we got to remember we have citizens in the community that are law-abiding. And they, you know, we shouldn't be social engineering on the back of our citizens. But I think that could cause a real big uptick. Second thing is a case is never over after somebody pleads guilty or has a trial. Increasingly, we find ourselves in hearings with charges of ineffective assistance to counsel against a public defender. We've had 3 in the last 3 weeks. Tremendously time-consuming things. Legally technical, time-consuming for the courts, time-consuming for us. So what has happened in something that you really don't capture in the statistics is all this time we're spending on probation revocations, post-trial motions, things like that. It's gone up remarkably. I don't know quite how you would capture that, but that's where we see our big increase. Not so. Our numbers are pretty consistent, as you can see, over the last 3 to 5 years. We're not going up and down a lot. But what we're getting is a lot more of these post-trial motions, things like that. As far as violence goes, we're doing better. We actually, I don't know if you saw the most recent statistics in Shawnee County, I think, had the largest drop in violent crime of any county in the state. And I think there's some reason. I think early intervention, again, is a great idea, and that's part of it. Proactive domestic violence prosecution is part of it. But we have an opportunity here to focus on the people who are really bad people and try to help the people that can be helped. And I'm just afraid we're going to get flooded on the streets with people who are just going to commit more crimes against our citizens. So I think as we go forward, we're going to have to start thinking about how to capture what that means for workload.
Yeah.
Is what do all these post-trial motions and probation revocations mean? And can that be translated into meaningful review for this budget process?
Right. So, well, it sounds like you got some homework. You and your counterpart in Cheyenne can work on that.
Yeah.
And I think, you know, we'll certainly listen. And, okay. Well, appreciate your good work and wish you the best of health. And,
thank you.
And, okay. Any other questions?
Yeah, just Mike, really quick, if you know, with the case management system and the things that the Supreme Court's put in place, I think that, you know, the districts now have got that. Is there any way to capture that post-trial motions statistics from that case management system, if you're aware?
Mr. Chairman, Senator Perkins, I'm not aware that's something they keep statistics on. The district judge is probably better able to answer that. But I think, again, in terms of their time and their time studies, that would be an interesting thing to know from their point of view, because I know it's taken a lot more time for them, too.
Mr. Chairman?
Go ahead,
Kevin. I'd like to add that the governor did recommend 1 full-time position for District Attorney Number 7. He also recommended 1 FTE for District Attorney Number 1. He recommended allowing 2 part-time positions to be moved to full-time for the public attorney. And he's also recommended in his profile, and you'll see it through a governor's letter, that he would like to have $25,000 for a justice equity study to look at the 3 layers and also the counties and look at their position, look at their caseloads. We wrestled with this when we were building the recommendations, and we finally arrived at the fact that ANI HRD probably doesn't have the skill set to do this. A consultant probably be necessary. The governor doesn't necessarily think we have to go the consultant route. We can go intern topic, we can go management audit. But he does feel that we need to have some more information to see if we can't balance all three legs of this.
Interesting. Yeah. Okay. Thank you. Anything else?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you. Safe travels.
All right.
Take this stretch by your desk. I will transition to Agency 151.
Agendas.
Thank you. address. I'm like,
the building super said that.
Well, hang out, Lyle. Let's just get this thing done. Wow. We might get out of here by 5.
Can you take over the chair?
You're the vice chair. Get on it.
Yeah.
Seriously.
I don't want to piss off our chairman.
I think he'd be happy if he just
started. You got a quorum?
You think he would?
Quorum?
Can we miss it? What about that side?
We stand. We're the vice chairman.
We should get to work.
We're the vice chairman. Here, the speaker just told you.
Let's get to work. Every time I come in there, you guys are on break.
Man, seriously, start over.
Okay. I'm saving one file, and let me get done here.
What's new?
You've been going to those basketball games?
I have. Hey, the girls won today at noon. 75-64, that's why they beat you at noon. Down there.
Going out to look at the parking lot.
Oh, it's a boys game. Tomorrow.
Mm-hmm. Oh, it's actually, if you get here early enough, it's a shorter walk here. Than
well, we got 151 here, right? Jeremiah, what's this guy's name? Jeremiah. Have we got a quorum?
Yeah. John's here. We got three over here.
Yeah, they've got it. We've got it.
We better wait for Harshman.
No, come on, Glenn.
We better wait for Harshman.
No, just go. All of a sudden, come on. We're waiting for Chairman Moniz to call. Come on, man.
Here they come. See, I told him not to give up.
Chairman?
I'll tell you, the team that has a bigger potential for March, I think it's the girls.
Or one quick.
What?
I'm sending text to her. That's not a game.
Now, can't you keep hold of this?
I could.
Mr. Vice Chairman.
I could.
You could. Okay.
But I chose
fair
not
enough.
To.
As long as you're proactive and you're making these choices, I can get behind you.
Yeah, we're coming. Here we go. We're back on schedule. Okay. Hello, Mr. Speaker. Nice to see you.
Nice to see you, sir.
David here.
Nice to see you going to work.
Yeah, thanks. Yeah, we haven't been doing anything all day.
Can we get a call to Sergeant Arms, get the riffraff to leave?
Yeah, that's probably a pretty loose definition. Might have to clear us all out. Okay, we're on Agency 151, so welcome. If you have any opening comments, and then you can just take us right through your budgets, Ms. Sandberg.
That one looks like a sneeze.
How's this? Okay. I could talk louder if I stand up, but this isn't a courtroom, so I guess we have to sit down here. Thank you. My name is Jeremiah Sandberg. I'm the newly elected district attorney here in Cheyenne for the Laramie County District Attorney's Office. I want to start by going back to some questions that you all had asked me the last time I appeared before this committee, and you had asked me primarily to sit down with the numbers and see if I couldn't come back with at least some peripheral apple-to-apple comparisons between ourselves and the Natrona County District Attorney's Office. And so I've attempted to do that, and that some of that is going to be in my budget. Some of that is going to be in the packet that you should have available in front of you. It begins with the Crimes in Wyoming page. I begin with that because as a, baby prosecutor, I began working in the Goshen and then the Platte County Attorney's Offices to the north of here. And there was always this assumption, because we didn't have any ability to track our own numbers, that there was some sort of correlation between these crime statistics and what we were doing. And what I've learned since then is that there really is very little correlation between the crime statistics kept by DCI and the works that are done in the county and district attorney's offices around the state. The pages I have included in here are pretty much the only ones that have any relevance, and the only correlation that I can find, and on page 14 of this report, the only number that really is that important is the population of the state of Wyoming. And then on the next two pages, you can see the populations for each of the counties and jurisdictions around the state. While there are crime rates listed, I can tell you that those crime rates don't really reflect what the county and prosecuting attorney's offices are doing. And so whereas my predecessors would have cited to this information, said, here, look, Laramie County is the biggest. We got the biggest, one of the bigger crime rates, therefore we must be the busiest. I can tell you that I can't make that assertion based off of these reports because that's not how it sorts out. The problem with these reports is they count a lot of crime that's reported, not crime that's actually solved or crime that's actually prosecuted. These are events that are reported. The bigger thing to look at would be the clearance rates on these crimes. And when you start looking at clearance rates, even though Laramie County has a considerably higher number of reported crime, Detroit County has a higher clearance rate, and therefore, when you get right down to it, they have a similar in number of bad guys caught for the crimes. But then again, the problem still remains. I can't tell you if that's one bad guy who did 10 crimes that they caught or 10 bad guys who did one crime. That's still not included in these reports. So the next thing that I would invite you to turn to would be the district court statistics for last year. These become a little more reliable because each one of the, they call them criminal cases, but of course since they're in the district court, those are felony cases. Each one of those felony cases is a separate defendant, whether they have one count or 20 counts, that is a single case for the district attorney's office. And the district attorney's offices and county attorney's offices are the only agency outside, I guess, of the Attorney General's office, they can bring a felony case into the district court. So those are our cases. Those are cases that we are actively involved in, and I can tell you that they do have a little bit more correlation then to what happens in the district attorney's offices. Now, if we only look at this one year, you'd think that Laramie County is quite a bit busier than Natrona County, but if you look back through the reports back to, I guess, 2007 when the court started doing this, you would see that those numbers fluctuate from year to year. And some years we're in the first, some years Natrona County's first, Campbell County's getting pretty close to us, some years as well. In fact, in this year they were number two on the list, but, these numbers move up and down. And these numbers don't directly correlate back to the numbers that are filed in the, circuit courts because of the fact that we may plead the case out in the circuit court, or there may be some delay between getting the case bound over from the circuit court to the district court. So even the district court numbers have some problems with correlating to the circuit court numbers, which are the next set of numbers. But in any event, I give you these numbers just because these are the only other published sources outside of the district attorney's offices to tell you what we're doing. And so you really have to rely upon the numbers of the district attorney's offices that we keep to know exactly how much work we're doing because there's no direct correlation with DCI. There's some correlation with the district courts. There's problems with correlations with the circuit courts. And again, I'll go through that. The problem with the circuit courts is they list every citation that comes into the circuit court. So if you have a defendant who's driving down the road, speeding, weaving between the lines, it gets pulled over, the officer walks up, notices he's not wearing a seatbelt, notices he's got a little bit of alcohol on his breath, notices the open container in the vehicle, notices the meth or crack pipe or whatever happens to be there. You might end up with 6 or 7 type citations on one single case, and that's going to be broken down in the circuit court on the DUI and the misdemeanor non-traffic, traffic violations, and game and fish. I guess I wouldn't have a game and fish violation in my scenario, but you could think of one, I suppose, where you hit all of those above, and it's a single defendant, but yet ends up being 7 or 8 citations in the circuit court. So, again, there is some difficulty looking at those circuit court numbers and knowing exactly how many cases that is for the district attorney's office. So I understand the governor's proposed some money to do a case review. My suggestion would be the first thing you're going to have to do is at least most agencies in the state develop a way for them to track how many cases they have. I know that in the smaller counties that I've worked in, there isn't any such program in place, and we've sort of just guessed at what we were doing, and we guessed based upon, like I said, the DCI numbers and the court statistics. But there really isn't a great correlation between those and what you actually see in the district attorney's offices. The advantage of where I am now is that we do have a program. It's a program I'm going to ask you to fund. It's our software, JustWare, that keeps count of everything that comes into our system. JustWare tracks not only the criminal cases and misdemeanor cases and juvenile cases, but also tracks what I guess Blonigan refers to as junker cases, which is sort of the second problem with previous budgets produced by the district attorney's office in that my predecessor wasn't separating out those junker cases, and we track a lot more junker cases than Natrona County did, and so, again, that was artificially inflating the numbers that this office was reporting to this committee. And so when you account for those differences and you go in and you take out the Junker cases, we flip to the only comparison chart that I know of, and it's the one that we produced, is that the comparison between the Natrona and Laramie County District Attorney's offices. And these are based on Blonigan's numbers. He's produced them again in his budget. I have no reason to doubt that they're absolutely true. And going back through our numbers and accounting for all those Junker cases and taking them out, you can see as close to an apples-to-apples comparison as I can give you between the two district attorney's offices. I can tell you that this disparity seems to have increased. I haven't ran the numbers for 2013 and 14. I didn't have them when I made this chart. But in looking at Mike's budget for this year and then comparing that to the numbers that I know to be similar to ours, our cases seem to have gone up and his seem to have gone down. Now, that's probably normal fluctuation for him, but Laramie County continues to grow. And I attribute most of these numbers to population growth here. We have had since fiscal year 2007 about a 10,000-person increase to the county. We now have about, and I forget the exact number, but I think it's about 14,000 more people than Natrona County does. And if we have similar crime rates, and I have no reason to believe that we don't, then we have considerably more cases here to deal with than Natrona County does. And that's not a matter of sitting around here in a pissing contest with Natrona County. That's just sheer populations and crime rates. And there's not a darn thing we can do about that other than fight crime where it comes at us from. So, with that in mind, I've given you some other charts here. If you look at all the criminal case filings that have been filed since fiscal year 2007, and you compare that to where we were in fiscal year 2014, you'll see that we've had an increase of about 39% to the criminal case filings. That's a significant increase, and as this committee is aware, there's no additional staff for the district attorney's offices to handle that increase. In fact, we've lost a part-time position that was federally funded that we no longer have to help out with that. So we're actually down positions from where we were just even a few years ago. I didn't include the juvenile numbers, although I did leave those in my budget. The juvenile numbers have remained primarily flat. And the reason for that is not because we haven't had more juvenile cases to deal with. It's because the system, and I do mean the system, is already at capacity. If to take on more juvenile cases, the first thing we would need is another district court judge. And I know that the district courts are asking for another judge, and we can certainly use one. Without another district court judge, we can't push any more juvenile cases through. And I'm going to talk about how that has affected the system here in Laramie County in just a moment. But the biggest increase that we've seen is in the misdemeanor realm, and that is what I'm asking for in my exceptions. I think they're number 3 and 4. For misdemeanor attorneys to help take on this massive increase to our misdemeanor caseload. The attorneys I'm asking for in that, in exception number 3 and 4 would bring us back to caseload similar to what we saw back in between 2010 and 2011, which is the last time we had budget cuts here in the state. So I'm not asking to get back to those 2007 numbers. I'm just asking it back to the last time we had to tighten the belt around the state. I'm kind of jumping ahead. The last one of these charts is sort of an example of why those DCI numbers are so ineffective in predicting what it is that we do in the district attorney's office. This is a side-by-side comparison of DCI's reports for rape. Until last year, rape was defined as the forcible penetration of an adult female. Last year, for the first time in 80 years, they actually amended one of the definitions for the index crimes to include all adults. That still means that if you're 17 years and 11 months old and you're raped, you don't count in these numbers. And we have a lot more of that going on than I'd like to admit. But if you look here, this last graph, you can see how many sexual batteries, I like how we call them sexual batteries and assaults and not rapes anymore, we've had here in Laramie County. These are incidences tracked by DCI and incidences tracked by the Laramie County District Attorney's Office. The numbers have gone up, not down. And so if I turn to my budget requests, several things I'd like to point out in here. The first budget request was actually concerning our AWEC position. That's currently budgeted at 30 hours, considered part-time. when we started to look at how the Obamacare Act would affect this this year, we would either have had to cut that position back to, I think it was 20 hours is what they were telling us, or make it a full-time position. So this is already a partially funded position that, that this committee has given us for, I think, since 2007. Yeah, looking at our funds that we had available in the 100 series, we've had, unfortunately, a little bit of turnover this year. We had funds available in this biennium's budget to go ahead and pick up the benefits that would have been necessary to turn this into a full-time position. We just didn't have the authority to make it 40 hours. And so what I had requested is that this committee make this a 40-hour position. We had already picked up the benefits necessary to make it full-time under the Obamacare Act. And quite frankly, it's the most it's the smartest financial thing to do. We're already paying most of the expense here. I'm just asking for an extra 10 hours a week at $10 an hour. It's $100 a week, and just over $5,000 a year. So I'm not sure where the budget office came up with their number, but I don't need $68,000. I need about probably $11,000 for the biennium to make this a full-time position. There were some questions asked to Mr. Blunigan about the 900 series and why they were so different. And I can tell you that one of the differences is that position number two, priority number two, has been paid out of the 900 series for a number of years. This was a person that they were contracting with to come in and do the legal assistant work. Again, because of the Affordable Care Act or the Obamacare Act, this would no longer have been maintainable. And so initially we thought we'd have to make it a full-time position, but between the time we submitted this budget request and today, we have found a way around that. We are now contracting with a temporary agency here in town. That person can remain employed as a full-time person for the temporary agency at no additional cost to our 900 series and no additional cost to the state. And so I'm going to withdraw my request for number two because we found a workaround that's actually probably more financially responsible, and that you're not going to have to pay for benefits and retirement or any other incurrences like that. We then get to priority number three and four, and these are the misdemeanor attorneys that I'm asking for. And, again, I don't know where the budget offices comes up with their money, but I'm fairly confident I can hire some young attorneys out of law school to do misdemeanors for considerably cheaper than what they have us budgeted here for. But that is what I'm asking for, is entry-level attorneys who can get in there and do speeding tickets and the like, so that my more experienced attorneys can focus their time on the, I guess, major felonies that they don't currently have the time to do. If we don't have additional attorneys, I don't need the request number five, and that's the one that the governor's office has recommended to you. Without attorneys, I don't need an additional support staff member. What I need is attorneys to get in the courtroom. I have three circuit courts, and I only have two attorneys to go in there, and they run three dockets. And so the felony attorneys are constantly down covering for this court or that court. There's no consistency in the coverage of those cases, and things are falling through the cracks. Because of the increase of the felony caseload, I am in pretty good shape with felony attorneys, mind you, but I don't have the ability anymore to have them break off from what they're doing and go downstairs to help out cover in the circuit court. So, yes.
Mr. Sandberg, you probably heard Mr. Blunigan right before you, and he talked about how a legal assistant position was very valuable for his office because a lot of attorneys were doing lawyer work rather than final work for him.
Right.
Mr. Chairman, through you, I can teach attorneys to do legal assistance work. I cannot put a legal assistant in the courtroom, and that's what we need right now. We have empty chairs in the courtroom because we're not getting, we don't have the attorneys to fill all the dockets that are coming through. So I know Mike's got a little bit different needs than I have. And that gets me down to priority number six, and this would be the proposed additional juvenile attorney to take on some of this additional work. The numbers that I'd like to focus on here. First of all, our juvenile attorneys typically carry somewhere upwards of 200 cases, which might be fine if they were just crimes, but that's also including our attorneys that do the abuse and neglect and so forth sort of cases. The standard there is time to permanency. When we take a little kid out of a home, when do we get them back into the home with a plan, a permanent plan to be in that home, whether it's their biological home, or they're being adopted by some family member, or they're going to unfortunately have to have a termination of parental rights, and they're going to be into that sort of situation. the average, my recollection here in the state, is just over 200 days, 288 days, I believe it is. And unfortunately, here in Laramie County, we are the highest in the state at 495 days, almost double what the average across the rest of the state is. And that's a system problem. Like I said, we don't have the judges to hear these cases. And I don't have the staff, even if we did, to push the cases through at a speedy enough pace to get down to that number. Kids are out there languishing in purgatory because the system here isn't big enough to move them through at a speedy pace. And so that is the reason for my request for the priority number six position. Priority number seven is a little more straightforward. That's our software licensings. They're in the first part. These are software that we have to have to keep the office running. Without it, we pretty much shut down business and close up shop. The second portion of this would be for a system that we're putting into place. Mike talked about all the initial or additional e-data that we have to deal with now. This data comes in, or has traditionally came in, on floppy disk or thumb drive or CDs or whatever it happens to be. There's a lot more of it anymore. Every interview is recorded. Every traffic stop, even if it's just a speeding ticket, is recorded. Defense counsel wants that. We have to get it. We have to pass it through. What we began doing this year is implementing a server. It's a fairly beefy machine that can accept all of this data from law enforcement agencies here in Laramie County electronically, which means they don't have to spend the time to burn it off and bring it to us, and we don't have to spend the time trying to collect it up. It's there on the server. They just drag and drop from their computer to ours. We are in the final stages of getting that server hooked up to the net broadly, and we'll be able to then, once it's finally hooked up, click on our side of the server, pull it over to the defense side of the server. They can log in and download it. This is going to be a huge time savings for my office, and one of the reasons I don't believe I'm necessarily going to need all these additional staff positions. We're going to spend a whole lot less time copying data and handling data, and a whole lot more time doing the work of the office. So the request here is to, like I said, we started the implementation of this. The request here is to finish the implementation and give us a backup server, which the Laramie County commissioners have agreed to place down at the Archer Complex here in Laramie County. They aren't going to charge us anything to store it down there, and we're going to piggyback off of their network free of charge. And, in fact, we have at this point tied the servers back together for the first time since, I think, the 1990s. So they're ready to go. We're ready to go. We just need the equipment to make it happen. And the reason for this, again, is because we do have to maintain these files. Mike talked about having to get some new places to store files. This is my comparison. We're storing files now electronically. We're trying to do away with the paper docket as much as we can. This will allow us to take these cases and store them for as long as we need to, and what is a considerable amount of data. I could tell you that from a traffic stop, the disk that comes into us can be anywhere between 2 to 4 gigabytes of data. You need a big server to handle that data and hold on to it for a while. Fortunately, with traffic stops, we don't have to keep it that long. But if it's a homicide case, we may have to keep it for quite a number of years.
Mr. Chairman. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Sandberg, a question about all of the servers and everything. Mm-hmm. Did this go through ETS, or have you worked with the Supreme Court on this? I see a number of software items here that I haven't seen as before as anyone wanting to purchase. So I'm just curious as the process on all the computer equipment.
Mr. Chairman, through you, Representative Burkhart. So the software, I think traditionally hasn't been broken out to the degree that it has here, but my understanding has been in our exception requests before. So the software primarily is stuff that we've been asking for every biennium. This year it's just broken out a little bit more so you can see what it is that we're actually requesting. As for the security data, one of the things that I noticed when I first came into the office is that we were not a very secure site. Probably a 10-year-old Chinese kid could have broken in and got all the files in the district attorney's office. We took monies that had been allocated for computer equipment and corrected that problem and began building this server that I'm talking to you about. And so we are much more secure. In fact, we had to be secure before the county would agree to allow us to tie back into the county system, and they have done so, and we are. The The question about ETS, Representative Burkhardt, is the fact that we don't use ETS, that I guess there were some comments earlier about Waste Technical Services. That's part of our 900 series. We use a private firm here in Cheyenne to do our technical support. We find that they're much more responsive, and we actually get more bang for our buck. So that goes to part of why our 900 series is a little bigger than Cheyenne's, or excuse me, Casper's, is because they do go through ETS and we don't.
Mr. Chairman.
Yep, go ahead.
I'm a little curious, though. The Supreme Court has their own IT division people. We have ETS for the executive branch, and it appears you have your own ETS system or IT system that you use that's outside the state system. Is there a particular reason for that?
Mr. Chairman, through you, I'm not exactly sure of all the thought process that went into doing that. I know that that occurred back when John Ford was his district attorney. My immediate predecessor, Scott Homar, did not see a need to change that. And having talked with Mr. Flanagan about the services that he's received, I don't see any reason for us to change it either, because my understanding is working with ETS, Mike has a lot of problems getting them up there and getting them to do what they're supposedly contracted to do, and he pays them more for it. So I think financially it's more responsible to continue with the private service that we have here. We get a lot more response, quicker response, and we get more bang for the buck. Now, going to the system that the Supreme Court's putting into place, that's one of my concerns with getting this service built so that we can be ready for e-filing, which I understand is going to happen next year at some point. I don't know if it's going to be January 1st or December 31st, and I see Representative Nicholas shaking his head, but they've told us they're going to do it, and so I'm going to make sure that we're ready, and we will be ready. Okay. But in any event, we are trying to be as paperless as possible, as quickly as possible, because we expect the savings from that to be significant. The ability not to have to burn everything to DVD, these DVDs cost us a couple bucks each. We may have a couple in each case that we have to give out to the defense. The ability just to say, here's your login password, you can go on to our server and download those, is going to be immediate savings right out the gate. The ability not to have to print off reams and reams of paper because we now have it in a PDF format on the server, again, I think is going to be a very cost-beneficial savings to not only the office but the state.
Mr. Chairman.
Okay, go ahead. Representative Greer.
Yeah, I kind of ask these same questions of the Supreme Court in terms of have you looked at any cloud-based systems on this and the cost savings associated with that?
Mr. Chairman, through you, we have looked at cloud-based systems. The problem is they aren't as secure as we'd like them to be. We are, of course, dealing with fairly sensitive information concerning individuals. In fact, our criminal histories on individuals we cannot distribute, and we have to make sure they're absolutely secure. Otherwise, the feds take away our abilities to even have those reports.
Mr. Chairman, my office uses a cloud-based system, and we definitely have sensitive information. Mm-hmm. We have one attorney that does all the nasty stuff that you do. And, you know, we use Thomson Reuters, and my office is half the size of yours. And our monthly costs are less than $2,000 for those services. For all the data storage we need, everything is there. And I see we all, you know, there's a lot of software goes into the servers, and there's an awful lot of maintenance that goes into a server. And I just would encourage people to look at some other alternatives with that. And I'll ask one more question. That was more of a comment. But, you know, with a lot of these software systems in here, you're also going to have annual subscription agreements and updates. Is that true?
Mr. Chairman, through you. So the software, again, is stuff that we're already paying for. We're not asking for any additional software for the new system. The new system is just a big NAS. It runs on its own. Windows can connect to it, and Windows already does everything it needs to do. So the software, again, is just software the office already has had, and you're right, these are annual subscriptions or biannual subscriptions, and so that's not anything new. What we're building, this NAS device, is going to be at a secure location, hopefully, in our office, and then at a secure location down at the Archer Complex. The other advantage of it is it's going to be much, much quicker to download and view all the material we're talking about. I mean, you're talking about documents, I assume, not the digital data that the district attorney's office deals with, that's gigabytes and gigabytes of data. And once you start trying to upload it to the cloud, it takes a long time to put it there, and it takes a long time to bring it back down, at least with our current technology here at the district attorney's office. So for us, it's more productive and quicker to put it down at the Archer complex as our backup, so in case something like a fire at the courthouse and the sprinkler system comes on and our NAS gets burned down here, we do have an off-site backup so that we can make sure we don't lose any of the files. We did look at cloud, and it doesn't seem to us to be as secure, and it's certainly not nearly as quick as we need for the district attorney's office.
My experience, but is otherwise. Again, just another question too is, you've got a charge in here for Microsoft Office Standard, and have you looked at the 360 option, which are automatic updates to that whole suite, and very inexpensive when you're looking at work groups.
Mr. Chairman, through you, I'm not sure that we have actually looked at the 360 option. I think this was just updating the stuff that we already had without having to go to something new.
Okay. I think Representative Moniz and then Representative Nicholas.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Earlier you stated that you would prefer to have a misdemeanor attorney instead of a legal assistant, and you could hire a misdemeanor attorney a lot less than what is in your exception report. What could you hire one for?
Mr. Chairman, through you. So the $11,000 was to make the AWEB position a full-time position. Let me just go back to the page that has that on there. I can tell you when I first started off in Goshen County, I may well have been the cheapest paid prosecutor in the state. I don't know, but I was paid about $40,000 a year. It seems to me like we could hire somebody in about the $55,000 a year range, which would be $110,000 plus benefits, which my estimation would bring us in considerably cheaper than the $170,000 that the budgeting office has proposed.
So how much was that again, did you say?
If we could do it about $55,000 a year, we'd be about $110,000 over the biennium plus benefits. Plus benefits. But I don't see benefits being whatever that difference would be, $55,000, I guess.
Mr. Chairman.
Okay. Well, go ahead.
I'm just doing a number count. It looks to me like the Casper office has 9 attorneys plus their district attorney.
Correct.
And you have 11 plus a district attorney. So they've got 2 fewer attorneys on staff than you do.
Mr. Chairman, through you, I'm not sure that's entirely correct. We both have 9 attorneys, including the district attorney. We both have 1 HIDTA position, and HIDTA, of course, being federally funded. And then the Laramie County District Attorney's Office also has a victim-funded, I think it's through Victim Services funded attorney to do domestic violence cases. That funding, again, is federally funded. It doesn't show up in our budget, but it is an additional position that Casper doesn't have. That's true. But that position is specifically limited, like the HIDTA position, to a certain class of cases. They can only do domestic violence-related work. And in reorganizing my office, that means that they only do misdemeanor domestic violence work. Prior to that, they were trying to do both misdemeanor and felony casework, and that wasn't working out. So in reorganizing the office, that position now does misdemeanor domestic violence work. That caseload, by the way, for that attorney is about 500 to 600 cases a year. The position currently is holding on to about 200 cases. That's about half of what the other misdemeanor attorneys do. Those guys' caseload right now is about 450 to 600 cases, active cases that they're prosecuting. They do between 12 to 14,000 cases in a year.
Okay. Okay. Any further questions? Okay. Continue. I think we're...
So I think I'm near the end of my budget request, yep. Unless there's any more questions concerning the exceptions.
I think that's it. Then are there any questions? Any other comments?
The final comment I would have is I do have some concern in the budget the budget proposed by the governor in the cuts he's proposing to happen to the specialty courts, specifically the DUI and drug courts. I can tell you that this will greatly affect our ability to divert people from the penitentiary system. Looking at DUIs, felony DUIs specifically alone, my guess is we do probably 40 to 60 cases a year through the DUI court here in Laramie County. If that program is cut, probably at least a third of them or more will end up in the penitentiary system. If you had even just 20 more ended up in the penitentiary system in a year, that's going to be about $1 million extra that this state is going to have to pay to house them there. They will be going ostensibly to be doing the ITU program, which means they're going to be there for about 3 years. So even just in a single year, you're going to add on about an extra $3 million to the system. And that's going to be significant. So I think when you talk about bang for the buck, you don't get any better bang for the buck than the diversion program through the DUI courts and the drug courts. And I would encourage this committee to consider very hard how much you're willing to cut that system, because on the back end, you're going to end up paying for it in the penitentiary.
Okay. Mr. Chairman.
Go ahead, Representative Greer.
I don't know who this is a question for, but and I'm looking back here at priority number 7. Again, that does anybody know the 20,000 that the governor did not recommend out of that priority?
Yeah, good question.
If I may, Mr. Chairman, through you, in looking at the budget and the fact that we are being asked not to replace equipment that doesn't need to be replaced, we had budgeted approximately $30,000 for replacement equipment, sort of like we do every year. We recycle some of this equipment through. We just upgrade it about every 4 years. What we are proposing doing is not doing that, and instead going to a replacement-only system. So if it breaks, we'll fix it and replace it, and if it doesn't break, we won't. And we figure that'll save us about $20,000, and so we volunteered when we met with the governor's office to give up $20,000, and I think that's where that number comes from.
Okay. Anyone else? Okay, Mr. Co-Chair.
Got to get to the position. Never mind, because you withdrew it. Okay, never mind.
Everybody's got everything they need. Okay. Okay, I think we're finished. Thank you very much. Appreciate your presentation. Well, it's not even 5 o'clock. We should have scheduled 2 more, Don, so we go to 7 tonight, like we have the last 2 nights.
If I may not, I'm off the clock, theoretically. I did bring
copies
of papers if you guys want to read them. This was ran in our local paper here recently, and they did a pretty good job of explaining why those DCI numbers aren't that accurate when you're looking at the district attorney's office. So I brought 3 copies of that. Okay, if anybody wants to read it, it's also online.
Thank you, Brian. Jeremiah.
Thank you. Well, we have a big university day tomorrow, University of Wyoming. And then we have UW and Wichita. Yeah, I think we're going to take about a, 14-hour, 15-hour break. So, okay, thank you, committee. 8 o'clock tomorrow morning.